Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. Welcome to the Madman Machine Show 147 for Friday, February the 20th, 2009. I'm not sure what to call this show. I have had so many candidates for what I wanted to call this show. The first one being Götterdämmerung, which is the German play by Wagner, which translates to basically Twilight of the Gods. And I'm not sure it's Twilight of the Gods. I think it's Twilight of the Mortals is what we're experiencing right now. So I'm not sure Götterdämmerung fits properly for me. Then I was thinking Emergence Through Emergency. Emergence Through Emergency. There are so many emergency bailouts that we're undertaking now, and there's a new order emerging through the emergency. You can just feel it. All the laws that are getting passed through without anybody ever reading them, except for the guys creating the laws months and months ago, that they're going to wait for the emergency to put it in place. I didn't like that title. Let's see, what else did I have? Gungala Gunga. Gungala Gunga. Or as Bill Murray said in Caddyshack, he was caddying for the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama hits it long, really long. He hit it off a cliff into a 10,000-foot crevasse near a glacier. And he said, turned to him and said, Gunga Galunga, Gunga, Gunga Galunga. So, and then he said he stiffed him at the end of the round. He said, hey, Dalai Lama, you know, what's up? And the Dalai Lama said, on your deathbed, you will receive full consciousness. And Bill Murray said, well, I got that going for me, at least. But I didn't like Gunga La Gunga, and I didn't like On the Brink. I think, who is it, David Faber on the CNBC, The Brain on CNBC in the morning. He was talking about banks on the brink. He said, you can put on the brink after any phrase these days. And it makes sense. You know, finance on the brink, Europe on the brink, banks on the brink, economy on the brink, stocks on the brink. We're on the brink. It really feels like we are at a tipping point. And that was going to be another title, The Tipping Point. It feels like we have reached an inflection point. I know, by judging by the market on Thursday, February 19th, Dow Jones Industrial Average closed below its November lows, and it's the lowest since October 2002. So that's, what is that, 6.5 years ago. It's now back to that low, and there's no feeling by anybody that the market can go higher from this point. Is that the point that the market reaches a bottom when no one thinks it can go higher? Is that capitulation? I guess we'll find out in a few months. It sure doesn't seem like there's any good news out there. There would have to be something new to be good news to make stocks go up again, wouldn't there? But when they do, they might very well leap back up when people see, hey, there is something good out there. We can really, you know, get involved in this, and they start jumping back into stocks in panic, buying almost up from the bottom. It's going to be a wild ride from this point on. That's one thing that is for sure. Hey, I wanted to thank everybody for sending me birthday wishes last week. Last Tuesday was my big birthday, and I got Twitters, tweets, Facebook messages, emails. I thank you all so very much for that. It was fun to know somebody's out there listening, at least. Madman Machine is brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. Check them out on the web at ifa.com. They're more than just index funds, you know, and I'll talk about that a little bit more later in this show. Also coming up on the show, we're going to talk about Gmail's calendar sync and contacts sync for the iPhone. We'll have a spin at the Guru Roulette Wheel. I'll talk about the real reason for metal detectors in airports. We'll have the Learning Earning segment, where we learn how to earn our financial freedom. We'll have a look at a crazy idea for investing. We'll have an iTunes tip. We'll have a tool in the crib. We'll talk about best ways to invest in inflation. And I'll have another way to listen to podcasts a little bit faster. So let's get right to it. First of all, Gmail Calendar Sync came out last week, and this is a pretty cool tool for the iPhone. Just Google Gmail calendar sync and contact sync. But the neat thing about it was I discovered how to turn my iPhone into a BlackBerry, finally. Basically, what I mean by that is it automatically pushes email to me. I don't have to go grabbing it every time. The thing will buzz and it'll beep when I've got a new email in. That has nothing to do with the Gmail calendar sync, but I just found out about it at the same time, how to set it up. Gmail, basically, the Google people have installed an Exchange server somewhere that the iPhone can talk to natively, and so that's what lets me turn my iPhone into a BlackBerry. So, one of the most expensive monthly bills we get is the cable TV bill. And we don't really watch that much TV. So I'm wondering, you know, I think we pay $106 for all the various cable boxes that we've got and all the channels that we get. We don't get any of the premium subscription channels, but we do get some of the sports channels, like a Fox Soccer channel. I guess it comes bundled in the big package that we get. But that's $106 a month. Can't we figure out a way, now that the internet has so much video on it, to actually absolutely get rid of these cable boxes and just watch video off of the internet? Seems like the only thing I wouldn't really be able to watch, of course, is live stuff very easily. They do have Hulu now for all the archived shows. But then live sporting events aren't as easily accessible on the internet. Unless I could find, like Adam Curry does, someone with a sling box that they let me control their sling box, and I can watch live TV over the net from their sling box. Yeah, right. So I'm going to be looking into, should we keep our cable TV or not through this recession? Let's have a spin at the Guru Roulette Wheel, the world's favorite game. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble. And for the selected guru, I'll give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Red Machine Show 147 is Rick Santelli. Rick Santelli. He made the news today, February 19th. He went on a rant this morning. In case you don't know who Rick Santelli is, he is an analyst on CNBC. He's on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and he talks about bonds a lot of time. Very knowledgeable guy. But he said, I have an idea. You know, the new administration is big on computers and technology. How about this president and new administration, why don't you put up a website to have people vote on the internet as a referendum to see if we really want to subsidize these losers' mortgages, or would we like to at least buy cars and buy houses in foreclosure and give them to people that might have a chance to actually prosper down the road, and reward people that would carry the water instead of drink the water? And then a roar went up on the trading floor behind him. Yay! And he said, the traders are pretty much of the notion that you can't buy your way into prosperity. And if the multiplier that all of these Washington economists are selling us is that we never have to worry about the economy again, the government could spend $1 trillion an hour because we'd get $1.5 trillion back. He said, we're thinking of having a Chicago Tea Party in July. All you capitalists who want to show up at Lake Michigan, I'm going to start organizing. And I hear that there's a bunch of guys on the internet that actually applaud Rick Santelli for finally speaking out. Somebody on the media is getting angry at what's going on, and I think they're going to back him and actually have this tea party. At the end, Rick Santelli said, I'll tell you what. If you read our founding fathers, people like Benjamin Franklin and Jefferson, what we're doing in this country now is making them roll over in their graves. Well, congratulations, Rick Santelli. You're the guru on Mad Men Machine 147. So another thing they were talking about on CNBC was this Stanford financial guy. They couldn't find him for a while. I guess they've found him now, but they were thinking maybe he's fled the country. And I heard, I think it was Adam Curry talking about, they caught him at the airport. Or he was held up at the airport. I don't know if this is true or not. Because his American Express Black Platinum, what is it? Black card, platinum card, the super ultra card you have to pay $10,000 a year to get. They cut it off. They denied him access to his card. And I was thinking, a guy like that, he could just carry around gold and buy things with gold. He doesn't need a credit card. And then I was thinking, how could he flee the country with gold, though? Yeah, that's the reason for metal detectors in the airports. to find people who have gold or silver in their pockets. So I got an email from Christopher. He says, Paul, I have this crazy idea that I can't seem to shake. The leveraged short ETFs like DUG, which is ultra short oil and gas, or SDS, which is the ultra short, you know, 2X short S&P 500, and the SKF, which is the ultra short financials, have a lot of volatility and they peak on days when the market takes a big hit. However, when the underlying stocks and commodities at multi-year lows, it seems like these ETFs are also at multi-year lows for some strange reason. Here's my question. Does it make sense to short these ETFs, regardless of where I think the market is headed? Maybe you or someone in your audience has some insight to this question. And, you know, I just read this real quickly and I answered, no, I'm pretty sure the answer is no. You'd have two layers of expenses, you know, the shorting costs and the asking bid prices of shorting and all this sort of stuff. And why don't you just go ultra long instead and have the same effect? I mean, double shorting, right? And because time to time the market is loser's game, but hey, have fun. But later, I got to thinking about this, and I wonder if it's true. If you could find an exchange-traded fund that is so inefficient that it's guaranteed to lose to the market, and then you short it, then aren't you guaranteed to gain to the market? That's a good question, and it's something worth a little bit of study. If anybody has experience with that, get in touch with me somehow. There's many ways. You can email me, feedback@madamandmachine.com. You can call the voicemail line, 571-366-7121. I think that's the number. Give it a call and see if that's the right number. You can go ahead to drop.io/madmoneymachine. You can go, what else? twitter.com/madmoneymachine. And sign up to follow me, and I will follow you back. That's the way you do it in Twitter. And then you can direct message me. Once we've established that link. And there's probably a bunch of other ways. I can't remember them all. But if you know how to short, ultra short, exchange-traded funds, and does it make sense, give me a call. Let's move on to the Learning Earning segment, where we learn how to earn our financial freedom. So we've been all through the IFA investment principles of investing, those seven principles. We did them the previous seven shows. And I also talked on the last show about the IFA challenge, where you send in your portfolio for the past eight, nine, whatever years, and they will benchmark it to their portfolios and see how you did. And what they say is they haven't found one yet that is more optimal than one of their portfolios. And by optimal, what do we mean? Basically, we're kind of talking about Sharpe ratio. We're kind of talking about if you plot it on a graph of return versus risk, return on the y-axis, risk on the x-axis, risk measured by standard deviation, that you want to be top left, and their portfolios are more top left than anybody else's. Well, yeah, you could you can find portfolios that have beat their portfolios. If you go and do data mining, go look back in the past and try to, you know, tweak them so I find a fund that's a little bit better here and another fund that's a little bit better. Oh, let me give that one 34% and the other one 17% and just tweak it in a certain time span and all that. So yeah, there's portfolios that beat their portfolios, no doubt about it. And there's probably advisors that can get you into DFA funds that are slightly less expensive, because IFA charges a maximum fee of 0.9% to get in to handle their accounts and so forth. So what do you get for your 0.9%? Why would you want to hire IFA to manage your money, to handle your financial freedom, help you manage your financial freedom? It's because there are many other services that IFA does beyond just getting into those DFA funds. And if a person that's a do-it-yourselfer tries to compare their portfolio with an IFA portfolio, are they including the amount of research time that they took to look in how to construct their portfolios? Are they adding up how much time it takes to do the trading on their portfolios and looking through all the reports and things? And do they ever make errors in a trade? You know, I've heard stories where someone puts in a buy order in their brokerage software And instead of putting in, they want to buy $7,000 worth of something, a stock, they buy 7,000 shares. And they type in 7,000, they hit buy. You know, buy at the market. And boom, the order goes out. Now what are you going to do? It's all on you, ma'am. And so there are allowances for errors in financial advisors. And there's a whole lot of other things that IFA provides to you. They will do the rebalancing for you. They will do the tax loss harvesting for you. They'll help you through these market cycles. Very emotional times to be in the market. They'll help you through that. They'll help you rebalance according to your risk capacity. As the market does indeed go down and you do have less net worth, maybe your risk capacity does indeed go down because you can't afford now to lose any more money. So you have less risk capacity, unfortunately, because we got to get back up at some point. But they'll help you do that risk analysis. And of course, if you're a small business and you need to provide 401ks to your employees, my goodness, what a fantastic opportunity you would be giving them to get them into IFA portfolios by going setting up a 401k account with Index Funds Advisors. That's the difference between do-it-yourself, cheap advisors, and Index Funds Advisors. Visit their website and learn all about earning. Learn how to manage your financial freedom. Take the risk capacity survey, take the portfolio challenge, and most importantly, sign up for an account with them. Let them help you manage your financial freedom. I want to get into this where's the interest question one more time. Trey writes in, and I wonder if Trey happens to be the third child, by the way. He says, Paul, so I think I understand what you're asking, and I might have figured out the answer for at least a simple case. Let's look at the hypothetical situation where there's 100 ounces of gold in the whole world and I own it all. You then ask me to loan you that 100 ounces, which I do on the condition that you return to me the 100 ounces plus an additional 10 ounces at the end of the week. Now, obviously, I've set you up for failure because even if you were to put the 100 ounces under your bed and scour the world for more gold, you wouldn't find any and you'd be short 10 ounces when payment is due. In this case, I will have to accept some other form of payment that I think is equal to the missing 10 ounces of gold. Let's change the situation, though, which, by the way, so they're gaining property. Well, I guess that's all right. Let's change the situation, though, and say that instead of you borrowing all 100 ounces, I only lend you 90 ounces and expect you to return the 90 ounces plus an additional 10% as interest. In this case, I still have 10 ounces and you have the remaining 90 ounces. Now, let's say we both sit on our stash of gold until the end of the week. This, again, leaves you short on your payment by 10 ounces, 9 ounces, and in the same situation as before. Now, what if I had decided to buy a motorcycle with my remaining 10 ounces the day after I lent you the other 90 ounces? Now, you can go to the motorcycle dealer and convince him to buy something from you for 10 ounces. Okay, so the motorcycle dealer has the 10 ounces now. You're going to sell something to the motorcycle guy. If you're successful, you now have the full 100 ounces that you owe me at the end of the week. Now, after you have paid me, I have my original 100 ounces of gold plus a brand new motorcycle. So it seems that for the borrower to be able to pay the interest, the lender must first spend the interest. I'm not sure how or if this could be translated to banks or the Federal Reserve System. You mentioned Murray Rothbard's What Has Government Done to Our Money on one of your shows, and I'd like to recommend it. It will give you 1,000 more reasons to be skeptical of government-printed money. If you enjoy that book, his other book, For a New Liberty, is also extremely thought-provoking. Well, I just want to say that I really enjoy the show and all the sound investing advice. Thanks, Trey. Thank you, Trey. And I think that does clear it up. And hopefully I can close out that topic. Here's a little trick I learned in iTunes that I wanted to pass along to you. It's just something that's kind of neat, I think. I like to sort my songs by artist. But then I'd really like to have their albums sorted by the year that they were put out. So that Steely Dan, you know, is sorted by their first album, then their second album below it, and the third album below that, all the way down to their most recent album at the very bottom. There is a way to do that in iTunes. If you click and make sure you have the album column available, and if you click on it with your left mouse button again, it will sort it in a different way. You'll see the title changed to Album by Artist. Well, click it again, and it will change to Album by Year. And then if you click it again, it goes back to just sorting by the album. But if you sort it Album by Artist... And I'm looking at Steely Dan now, see if it's sorted in year order. No, it is not sorted in year order. So click it again, album by year, and I'm going down, and I see that it's sorted the right way. If this is providing you have proper years associated with your album, but and I do in this case. So that's our iTunes tip of the week. So let's pull something out of the Mad Mum Machine tool crib. I mentioned on previous shows that I'm starting to understand Twitter a lot more, and I think TweetDeck really helped me understand it. You know, we started out with Twitter just looking at the web page, and yuck, that's nothing. Then somebody said Twirl is the application to get for Twitter, and it helped a little bit, but I still didn't get it. Well, with TweetDeck, I get it, because I can not only see all of my, all of the people I follow, and all of their tweets come up, which is kind of a mess. It's really a stream of a lot of topics munged together, but I can also put in a search, and one of the searches that I put in there is just simply the word Kramer, and I get other Kramers, yes, come up, but I do get a lot of people talking about Jim Cramer. And what I'll do then is if I see somebody that's posted something about Jim Cramer, I will click on their profile, on their name, and more than likely I will follow them. And a lot of times they'll follow me back, and hopefully they'll find out a little bit about the Mad Money Machine, and we can have a larger community of Kramer followers tuning into the show. Well, all right, so in addition to TweetDeck, here's the tool this week, and this is something that's really kind of neat and unique. StockTwits is a website that you can put your Twitter account name in and password. You can create a portfolio of stocks, or I guess ETFs or mutual funds, that you're interested in following. And now in TweetDeck, you can click a button. You can click the dollar sign up there, and it will give you the opportunity to choose a column from StockTwits now. You can follow other people that are StockTwits members. You can follow people who post tweets, about stock symbols. And so the protocol you use when you talk about a stock in Twitter then is to put a dollar sign before the ticker symbol. So if I want to talk about gold, and really just gold in general, I'll put dollar sign GLD. That's the exchange traded fund a lot of people use for gold. And or if you just want to talk about the economy in general and you want people on StockTwits to see it, at the end of your posting, put dollar sign, $2 signs in the message, and StockTwits will recognize that tweet is coming from you. They'll know all of the Twitter members that are members also of StockTwits, and they will repost that then into the StockTwits tweet listing. It's all very complicated, but it is really amazing how you can create this carved out community from Twitter that talks just about stocks and the economy now. And I can imagine a lot of other community type things growing up like this. And I guess TweetDeck's going to have to add a lot of buttons for all the various communities that they have, or some general purpose interface. But that's the tool of the week this time. If you have TweetDeck, sign up for account too at StockTwits.com and have fun playing around with that. I hope it doesn't turn you into an active trader though. Like other tools I've given you so far, this one is free. Did you see Ben Bernanke on TV the other day? He was giving a talk at the National Press Club, I think it was what it was called. And he was talking about inflation. He said, some observers have expressed the concern that by expanding the balance sheet, the Federal Reserve will ultimately stoke inflation. And that's what, yeah, a lot of people that I've been following are talking about inflation. He says, the Fed's lending activities have indeed resulted in a large increase in the reserves held by banks, and thus, in the narrowest definition of the money supply, the monetary base, resulted in a large increase. However, banks are choosing to leave the great bulk of their excess reserves idle, in most cases, on deposit with the Fed. Consequently, the rates of growth of broader monetary aggregates, such as M1 and M2, have been much lower than that of the monetary base. At this point, with global economic activity weak and commodity prices at low levels, we see little risk of unacceptably high inflation in the near term. Indeed, we expect inflation to be quite low for some time. So he acknowledged that they are inflating. But I think he kind of threw a red herring into the mix by saying they're talking about weak economic activity and low commodity prices, you know, in conjunction with inflation, because low commodity prices don't cause deflation. They're the result of deflation. But anyway, he went on then to talk about how they will correct inflation if it does happen. He says, however, at some point, when credit markets and the economy have begun to recover, the Federal Reserve will have to moderate growth in the money supply and begin to raise the federal funds rate. To reduce policy accommodation, the Fed will have to unwind some of its credit easing programs and allow its balance sheet to shrink. And he continues, however, the principal factor determining the timing and pace of that process will be the Federal Reserve's assessment of the condition of credit markets and the prospects for the economy. Okay, so Bernanke recognized that the plane is in a nosedive from high altitude. And at the last minute, he plans to push on the stick and go airborne. Go airborne again. And my thought is that I hope it's not a cloudy day when he has to judge how far the plane is from the ground. Or foggy day, I guess, for that matter. So he wrapped up his thoughts on inflation and how to avoid it like this. He said, as we consider new programs or the expansion of old ones, the Federal Reserve will carefully weigh the implications for the exit strategy. You've heard that term before, exit strategy? Ugh, what a bad term. Bad term to use there, Ben. He said, we will take all necessary actions to ensure that the unwinding of our programs is accomplished smoothly and in a timely way, consistent with meeting our obligation to foster maximum employment and price stability. So what do you think, I'm asking you now, what do you think the chances are that the Fed will get all of the necessary actions right? Have they gotten the necessary actions right up to this point? So what I did is I wanted to examine a scenario where they were not able to get it right. And we do indeed experience undesirable inflation, which I'll define as anything above 5% annually, although in the past we have seen higher episodes of inflation, and hopefully not. We don't need to talk about hyperinflation. So what I did is I took Simba's spreadsheet for backtesting portfolios, and he already has in there the CPI, for dates from 1971 all the way through 2008. And he already has in that spreadsheet a cross-correlation matrix between all of the Vanguard funds and each other. So you can tell if one fund goes up, would you expect another fund to go up at the same time? A high correlation, a number of one, means they're exactly in sync. One fund goes up 10%, the other fund goes up 10%. It goes down 10%, the other fund goes down 10%. They're very tightly correlated at one. Zero means it's completely random. One has nothing whatsoever to do with the other one. Now, minus one correlation means that as one fund goes up 10%, or the other fund goes down 10%, or it could be 2%. The percentages don't matter. It's just the direction more so. As one fund goes up in a negative correlation, the other fund goes down. And so I put in place of one of the mutual funds that correlates with all the other mutual funds, I put in the CPI data. It was very simple to do. Copy, paste, put in CPI data. It's now correlated with every other fund in this spreadsheet. And then I sorted it by correlation, the absolute value of the correlation. And the one that popped to the top was T-bills. And I looked at the period 1971, again, through 2008. This is the returns through all those years for T-bills. The correlation there was 0.63. So not a perfect correlation with inflation. But as inflation went up, the interest rates that they paid on money went up correspondingly. Now, the second highest one at 0.52 correlation was the good old inflation hedge, and this answers a question from a previous show, gold. Yes, indeed, gold is correlated with inflation at a 0.52. It's the second highest asset class, really, that correlates with inflation in this listing. I didn't have any other, you know, silver or anything like that, so we don't know. But now the third one in the list is long-term government bonds. Long-term government bonds. Didn't I just say in the previous show that long-term government bonds would do bad in inflation? Aha. Uh-huh. And that's true. It's a negative 0.40 correlation. So yes, bonds are correlated with inflation in a bad way. Short-term treasuries, on the other hand, are the next, the fourth highest, 0.28. Then commodities in general. There's a fund from PIMCO, PCRIX is the fund. It's a commodities fund, 0.25 correlation. So not completely strong, but it's the fifth highest in the list. Everything else was 0.24 or below, and there was actually one in there that was zero correlation, the microcap fund, BRSIX. So I plotted that on a chart, my favorite chart of risk versus return versus risk, and I wanted to look at periods of high inflation in particular. And if you look at the CPI from 1973 through 1981, the CPI, Consumer Price Index, was 8.7 in 1973. Then the next year was 12.3%. Then the next year was 6.9%. Then 4.9%, 6.7%, 9%, 13.3%, 12.5%, and 8.9%. Many years of inflation at or above 5%. So I wanted to construct a portfolio along the lines of this Harry Brown permanent portfolio that's good in any economic cycle, but I wanted mine to be good in the inflation cycle particularly. Well, he advises gold, you know, 25% in gold in the for the inflation cycle. But what if you put 100% in gold? How would you do? Well, you would have made out pretty well. According to this chart, it's about 23, 24%. Per year over that time period, but look at the volatility. 55% up and down. Could you really hold on to gold by itself through those years? I mean, you're not knowing that when inflation is going to end, right? So you want to kind of temper that with other things to bring down the risk. And if you tempered it greatly with a money market fund, the one that's highest correlated with inflation, and then also I wanted to add in some other equities that did well, microcap. I did add the commodities, which is the fourth or fifth highest one on the list there. And of course I added some small cap value a little bit. So here's the way the portfolio shakes out. I call it the inflation portfolio, 45% in the money market. 15% in gold, 15% in small cap value, 15% in micro cap, and then 10% in that commodities fund. What was the result? Over that period of time, the inflation portfolio had a compound annual growth rate of 15.5% and a risk, as measured by standard deviation, of 10.5%. Much better than that 55% than gold. Not quite the returns, though. Not the returns of gold's 23-24% per year, only 15.5% per year. Still pretty good. The Harry Brown permanent portfolio was slightly less optimal than that portfolio for that period of time. We're doing data mining here, of course. Harry Brown permanent portfolio came in at about 13% annual return and about 11-12% risk. So you can see all the different components. Gold, the microcap, the money market, they're scattered all over this chart. But when you combine them together into a portfolio, it really helps optimize the portfolio. Well, this is not a recommendation to invest your net worth in the inflation portfolio, but it's an exercise in education, and I hope you understand what's going on with it. One more tool I want to give you on show 147 You know, there are some podcasts that I listen to that just drone on, like this one, actually. This is going on about 30-some minutes. Drone on, and they talk, and one guy talks, and hey, and a lot of silence and gaps and talking. You know, the Leo Laporte podcasts go on now for, what, an hour and a half? Oh, gosh. Please do gap reduction or something, at least. Do some editing on these shows so we can listen. Well, here's a thought. You know, what if your iPod could play back podcasts at 1.5x? Yeah, fast playback, you know, kind of speed it up a little bit. Well, it can't. I used to have an iPod. It was an iRiver, and it actually had a setting in it where you could adjust the playback speed of audio, and it would play back faster. And it was pretty cool. You could listen to a 90-minute show in about 70 minutes, saving you 20 minutes for something else. Well, so the iPhone doesn't have this capability, but there is something pretty cool. Podshifter.com. Huh. Podshifter.com allows you to put in the URL of the feed of the podcast. Well, and then you can subscribe to their new sped up speed in iTunes and just bring it down. It's pretty cool the way it works. So, for example, if you wanted to listen to Twit in a faster playback, first of all, you have to go, if you're subscribed to Twit in iTunes, the way to find out what the feed address is to click on the podcast link, click right on it, and say show description. Up will come a window, and the second line in there is the URL. For Twit, it's leo.am/podcasts/twit. So you would type that into podshifter.com's address bar that comes up. And you can select then what the playback speed you want to be. Their default is 1.2x. I did one show at 2x and it was a little bit too fast and hectic. I mean, you really had to concentrate at the rate they were talking. I'm trying 1.6x right now. It seems to be pretty good. You can really get through some shows a lot faster. So paste in the URL, click 1.6x, then click shift it. Shift it. And back will come another URL that you copy. You copy that new URL that they give you, and you go into iTunes then, in your podcasts section. You click the advanced tool menu at the top, and click subscribe to podcast. Up will come a little window with an entry box, and you paste that PodShifter URL into there. Now you're subscribed to this sped up podcast feed. And I actually haven't listened to one just yet. I've tried a couple. Haven't listened to one all the way through just yet, but I'll let you know maybe on the next show how it works for me. Let me know how it works for you. Now, don't do it on this show. No. This show's already short enough, right? Do it on one of those long shows and let me know how it works. Well, if you enjoyed the show, I hope that you'll tell somebody else about it. And let them know. Let them enjoy the Mad Money Machine. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money. And it takes... See, I still haven't picked a title. It takes Gunga Lagunga. It takes Gata Damarung. It takes emergence through emergency. It takes being on the brink to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next Friday. In the meantime, please visit the folks that bring you the Mad Money Machine. Help me help them help you. Help me help them help you. And visit their website at ifa.com. And check on some of the videos that they've got out there. They're fantastic. Truly, they are. Good luck, everybody, in the market. I'll see you next Friday.